John Adams once said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." Jump ahead to today, and who would have thought that our morality has so plunged in America that we can't even tell the difference between a boy and a girl, even though, of course, we can biologically. But a new woke ideology, counters those inconvenient facts. Journalist Brandon Showalter has written articles and recorded some podcasts on what he calls generation indoctrination. This five-part investigative series, according to Pinkston Communications, pushes back on the transgender narratives being targeted at young hearts and minds. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Brandon Showalter joins us now. Brandon, thank you so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry. Good to be with you.
Okay, so first of all, do you mind my framing this in a moral type of backdrop? Because I think that's important for people to realize. I mean, I think there is a moral component to this whole issue.
Well, I absolutely do, particularly when it comes to biomedical ethics. We can't ignore the moral underpinnings when we're speaking about how we approach the human body, medical care, particularly regarding children. These things are of paramount importance. And so it's important to have the moral dimension to the discussion. Absolutely.
All right. Now, first of all, there are some children who are confused about their gender, and that's been the case, you know, forever and a day. But what's new today with this whole big transgender fad? And forgive me for using that word, but that's what it is in many cases.
Well, there's no question, or some people call it a craze. The fad or craze, I think, is most closely linked to what I believe and what many believe is a social contagion that has been spread in school environments and especially by social media on sites like Tumblr and YouTube, where these transgender-identified influencers on TikTok also spread this idea that being another gender identity is a really cool thing to do. The mass media is, of course, very complicit in this, churning out the same message that these are just identities that you can identify with irrespective of your biological sex. And so we're seeing huge numbers among Gen Z, especially, of young people identifying in the alphabet soup of LGBTQ+. But really, they're just very, very confused. And what is especially awful today is that there is an entire industry within the medical system that is more than willing to put children on some combination of puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and then potentially a body-altering surgery in pursuit of a physiological impossibility. And it has become entrenched in our institutions, and we do explore that in considerable detail in our podcast series, Generation Indoctrination, that you mentioned there at the beginning.
Okay, I have a link to that. Is there a profit motive possibly with this? I mean, for example, in the case of Big Pharma, where there's money to be made with repeat customers with puberty blockers or other kind of drugs.
Mm-hmm. There absolutely is a profit motive. And when you start to talk about that, a lot of people start thinking that you're wearing a tinfoil hat. I think maybe some people are less inclined to think that way in light of what we have seen in the past 2 years with public health protocols and the draconian measures that were taken around the world and in our own country as well. But there was a journalist by the name of Sue Donham a few years ago who really exposed this, and my friend Jennifer Billick, who's an extraordinary investigative journalist, did some incredible work elaborating on this as well. So I have to give those two women shout outs here. But a blocker, for example, Lupron, that's a drug that treats men for prostate cancer and women for endometriosis. And so the dosages of those cost thousands of dollars. I don't know what their current prices are, but a few years ago, I think it was like $4,000 for a 3-month dose or something like that. The pediatric version of the drug is even more expensive, and these are implanted into children suffering from gender dysphoria, despite there being no FDA approval or long-term tests on these drugs. Subcutaneous implants, I mean, they're thousands of dollars, even more expensive than the adult versions. And because this is in pursuit of a lie, in pursuit of a physiological impossibility, you've got a lifelong medical patient. And if you follow on the blockers with cross-sex hormones, you've got even more drugs to sell. And I saw a calculation that Jennifer did or something where if you put just a small cluster of young children on blockers for a couple years, you've got millions of dollars in drug sales. And the surgery industry is a behemoth all its own, where I think the value projection figure for 2026, according to Global Market Insights, was something like $1.5 billion. And just in 2019, I think the figure was $316.1 million. So this is a growth industry. And you see these trends where we do have data, and we don't have very good data in this space, but what we can see is that the numbers are steadily increasing and that this is clearly not an organic development, but a top-down social engineering truly disturbing phenomenon that's skyrocketing across the world, particularly in the United States and Canada, where our medical protocols are basically in keeping with the goals of transgender activists. Unlike Europe, where in Sweden, Finland, France, and the UK, they're backing away from it.
Wow. And in some cases, it's because of lawsuits, as I understand it.
We're starting to see those lawsuits start to happen. In the UK, the Tavistock was closed in part because of a judicial review that was brought by a detransitioner, and then an independent review followed on after that. And the independent review ordered the closure of the Tavistock clinic, and they're going to be doing more regional centers for this kind of treatment. And we'll have to keep a watchful eye on it. But that was a big development over there. I'm starting to see signs of more and more lawsuits come in various places, and that will probably make it too financially cost prohibitive for the clinicians who are doing these experiments on young people.
Going back to the drugs themselves, the puberty blockers, do we know in the long term, you said there's been no long-term studies by the FDA or whatever to approve these things for kids and so forth. Is it possible that these drugs not only create a dependency for the kids to keep taking them, but that they may be even harming them biologically?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, this is harmful. The big line that transgender activists like to spout is that they are completely safe and reversible. They are not. England's National Health Service used to say something like that on their website, and they have since taken it down, and it now says that the long-term effects remain unknown. And I was a featured contributor in Tucker Carlson's original documentary called Transgressive, The Cult of Confusion on Fox Nation. And one of the things that I said there, and I'll say it here, is that this is all part of a prescribed pathway where it's just the logical next step. Once you get a kid on blockers, very few people put the brakes on it and you just go on to cross-sex hormones. Almost all of them do. So everybody acts like, oh, well, if you take puberty blockers, it's just pushing a pause button on puberty and you're buying the kids some time. That almost never happens. This is a grooming process, and I know you're not allowed to say that on Twitter, or you weren't, but children are groomed down this pathway to think that they need this medicalization in order to be their true, authentic selves. And when you combine blockers with cross-sex hormones, it's almost a guarantee, to name just one side effect, that they will wind up irreversibly sterile.
Wow. And who's the big push behind all this? I mean, obviously we see again the profit motive for the big pharma. I'm sure somebody's got a conscience somewhere. We also see the profit motive with some of the medical, operations or, facilities that provide these operations. But these transgender activists that you talk about, describe them. Who's leading all this?
Well, there are a number of them, but I'll tell you, there are very powerful, mostly men, but some women too, in the medical industry, investments in big pharma. I mentioned Jennifer Billick. She's done sort of the yeoman's work on many of the families. One such person is John Stryker, who's got a medical corporation, and he runs the Arcus Foundation, which funds all of these LGBT activist efforts in various places. And he funds the ACLU, which sues states like Arkansas, which passed a ban on transgender medicalization for minors. And so the money just sort of circulates around at the top. The Pritzker family, Jennifer's done some great work on those as well. But you see these big sort of tech titan types, pharmaceutical industry, where a lot of their wealth is gestated there, and the activists. And this has become sort of the cause celebre within the elite intelligentsia throughout all of society, our media, academia, big business. They're captured by this ideology, and the Human Rights Campaign, the largest LGBT activist organization in the country, has a corporate equality index score where basically they've got corporations over the barrel. And if you don't kowtow to their demands, they castigate you, they lower your score, and your ability to do business is impeded because you're not seen as holier than thou by these LGBT activists. And so there's a very concerted effort. I know it all sounds conspiratorial and crazy, but these people have gobs of money. They are relentless and ruthless with their power, and they are pushing this relentlessly. And the saddest part about it is that children are being irreversibly harmed. Families are being torn apart. The human cost of this is, I think, going to take years to unpack journalistically. And I know that firsthand because I've lost count how many phone calls I've heard from heartbroken moms and dads who call me. Some of them are not Christians and they're very left wing and they don't agree with the Christian Post on much, but they're absolutely at the end of their rope trying to save their kids from medical harm.
Oh my goodness, this is incredible. Brandon, could you tell us about the surgeries, the transitioning surgeries?
Yes, and contrary to what you'll hear from a lot of mass media, they are indeed happening on minors. Back in August, I was so angry to see how the media was running interference for Boston Children's Hospital, to name just one place where they happen. And they were just denying that they weren't happening when activists exposed some of their own YouTube videos carrying their own watermark to explain how they do these surgeries on minors, especially double mastectomies. At double mastectomies at Boston Children's Hospital Gender Surgery Center from 2017 to 2020, they did 65 of them on minor girls just in those 4 years, according to the Journal of Clinical Medicine. But it's not just there, it's all across. They do vaginal plasties. I've seen a journal article from the Journal of Sexual Medicine in 2017 where a gender surgeon himself claimed that he did it to a 15-year-old boy, which is where they amputate the genitals and they, you know, try to make a facsimile of a vagina into a young boy. I've seen one account, for example, where a girl, I think, had to have 30 follow-up surgeries, and she was broadcasting this on Instagram. So we are disfiguring the body, again, in pursuit of a lie, and I think the medical carnage of this is only beginning to be exposed. But again, you wouldn't know about it because the media likes to cover this up and pretend that this is the standards of care for transgender youth or whatever it is that they're spouting. Meanwhile, the journal articles, if you actually dig deep into the research, the journal clinicians are themselves admitting that they do this to minors, and these surgeries are brutal.
Oh my goodness. And these are irreversible, aren't they? I mean, in other words, once this part is cut.
Once you cut a body part off, you can't get it back on, and there's nothing, an artificial body part doesn't, nothing like the real thing.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so what is the underlying, anxiety or something that even leads somebody to think, oh, this is what I need to do? Is it like a boy who thinks I'm trapped in a boy's body, but in reality I'm a girl? That kind of thing?
That's at base what it is, but I think some of this is just a social contagion spurred on by social media. There was a big study in 2018 by Lisa Littman of Brown University. I don't know if she's still with Brown anymore, but that was in Plus One. Transgender activists excoriated it, where especially young girls, they come out in friend groups in clusters as identifying as trans or non-binary or genderqueer, and it becomes this thing. Some of them are indeed anxious, depressed, dealing with other mental health struggles, and some of this is fed to them in school's propaganda saying that they can pick their gender. There's 72 options, I think, now. I mean, who knows? It's all such nonsense. But it often, autistic kids get roped into this very easily, and it's very alarming. But this very real distress that some of these young children are experiencing, gender activists in these institutions oftentimes sort of seize upon that, and they say, well, maybe there's something wrong with your gender. And especially if you're an autistic person, oftentimes you'll just fixate on that, and they come to believe that somehow they were, as the slogan goes, born in the wrong body. And all of their problems become about the gender confusion. What's actually true is that for these young people that are actually struggling, gender confusion is just a symptom. It's comorbid with these other mental health ailments and struggles. But somehow the gender stuff is what is addressed as though that is the problem. And if you fix that, everything's going to go away. Well, that's how the medicalization gets, you know, marketed to these young people and their families, and a world of hurt emerges. It's pretty catastrophic, but I don't want to make light of some of the distress that these kids are really experiencing. Of course, they deserve our compassion, and I wouldn't dream of making fun of a child who's truly struggling, and let's get them some real help and therapy and counseling. But finding a counselor or a therapist these days that'll help your troubled kid is, as one put it to me, it's kind of like trying to find a kidney on the black market. And in some states, it's illegal because under the relevant conversion therapy bans, they're not allowed to even help a child reintegrate with their biological sex.
Okay, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for this research, ChristianPost.com. All the best, Brandon.
Thank you, Jerry.